The Money Show.
Investment School.
Maya Fisher-French is a personal finance journalist at Maya on Money. Maya, there are a couple of ways that you can make money out of stock markets. You buy shares cheaply, they rise in value and you sell them. Or you buy shares, you hold on to them and you keep them. And every 6 months, you harvest something called a dividend. And that's cash from the company that gets paid to you. And then you reinvest that money in these great companies and you just keep doing that in purpose. Perpetuity. And one day in the future, maybe your great-grandchildren sell the shares because they've also been living off these things called dividends. What exactly is a dividend?
Yes, you know, Bruce, this is an interesting, you know, this idea of passive income, right? This is the buzzword. We all want to have a passive income. And when I say passive income, everybody generally thinks about property, you know, rental income. But I think very few people actually think about shares and how a share portfolio can provide you with passive income, which is dividends, which we're going to unpack a little bit later. But I wanted to just kind of make a comment because what I find, Bruce, is a lot of people, when they think of passive income, think of property, they say to me, oh, you know what? It's easier to invest in property. I understand property. Investing in shares is so scary. And I have a completely different view. I look at property and I think property is not a passive income. And I think anybody who invests in property will tell you it's a lot of work. It has high acquisition costs, high holding costs. You know, those transaction costs on property are really, really expensive. There's ongoing maintenance, tenant management. It's not very liquid. You can't divest yourself of property overnight. And, you know, whilst I meet many successful property investors that are, you know, they leverage, obviously, they have the ability to leverage their capital by getting their tenants to pay for the property, I invariably come across a lot of people who are not successful, who've been badly burnt, you know, having to fund the mortgage shortfall from their salary, and they're struggling to make ends meet. And I think a lot of people go into property without understanding the complexities of it. Yet people are nervous about investing in the stock market. But in my view, Bruce, when it comes to investing, especially for income through dividends, as you mentioned, it's actually a lot less of a hassle.
Let's just talk about property for a second before we get onto shares and dividends, because buying a physical property, and I think a lot of people got burned. There was so much hype and excitement when the sharing platforms were launching and you could join a platform and people would allow you to come and stay in their flat, or you could rent the whole flat. And these platforms are absolutely brilliant. And people were actually giving up their jobs and starting to manage Cape Town property portfolios. They were buying one-bedroom flats in buildings, ideally multiple flats in the same building, so they weren't de-risking. And then they'd, you know, rent these things out and would then, you know, spend their time going around cleaning them up, tidying them up, getting them ready for the next person. And that was all well and good while there was travel. And nobody could ever have anticipated the pandemic and the way in which it disrupted global travel. But I wonder just how much of a shakeout there has been in that sort of Airbnb hype cycle that drove some property prices in some parts of the country through the roof.
Absolutely, Bruce. And I think, you know, again, you know, obviously the pandemic affected everything. It affected most asset classes. But again, the difference with property is many people had mortgaged it. So they had debt on that property. So the impact of suddenly not being able to fund that with rental income really, really had a massive impact. I won't go into what it did to the long-term rental problems in Cape Town, because, of course, that's also been part of the challenge, is this too much stock went to holiday rentals. But, so maybe that's the one good that's come out of the whole thing, is that we're starting to see a little bit more long-term rental stock coming out of that. But, you know, Bruce, I come across also people, you know, who if they're not buying it for Airbnb for tourism, they'll buy it as an investment property in other parts of the country. And sometimes they also forget about the levies, these really high levies on the properties and all of these other costs that go with it. And people can get very, very squeezed. And that's the problem. You know, you take on this debt, you can't find a tenant, you've got all these additional costs, and it can be quite a problem.
And also for the last 15 years or so, they've not had to really contend with rising interest rates. Interest rates have been at record lows for much of that period of time, and then made even more attractive, of course, as markets fell off a cliff in April last year, or April 2020. And suddenly we saw share price, lending rates plummet, and that would tempted many people to buy again and to buy more property. And I am surprised by how many South Africans, when we do other people's money on a Monday night, go, oh no, I like property. Property is what I like. And they'll do the admin and they'll do the debt collection, or they'll add another cost layer on and get an estate agent to do it for them. But they've got the sense that bricks and mortar, you can see it, you can look at it, you can feel it, you can visit it. You can go and stay there if you don't have a tenant. You can go there and fix the plumbing and do the painting and do the maintenance and pay the levies and pay the taxes and all of that sort of stuff that comes with it. Sure, property's a mission. So let's talk about a much easier way.
I'm on your page there.
It is an absolute nightmare. It really is. It works for some people. Some people have got the patience in them and can do the stuff themselves. By the way, they're good at debt collecting, and they're good at finding their own tenants. They're good at maintenance and doing all of those things that cost hundreds of rands worth of call out fees. You know, just to get to unblock a sink, and then you've got to fight with, you know, well, you know, did you stick the tissue paper down the drain and block it yourself? In which case, you're responsible. Well, it doesn't say so in the contract. Oh, please, sir. Tired of those boring conversations. Let's rather do something sensible and invest in long-term shareholdings, the sort of stuff Warren Buffett likes to do, and that's buy and invest for the long term and reap the dividends.
Absolutely. So this, you know, dividends, just, you know, 101, is it's a portion of the profits that a company makes, that it pays out to its shareholders. As you said, it does it generally twice a year. There's an interim and then a final dividend. And I think what I like about dividends is that, unlike the share price of a company, dividends are generally more predictable because they're based on the profitability of the business rather than any external events that affect, you know, the stock market valuation. So, you know, if we think back to 2007, 2008, that big credit crisis, that happened in other parts of the world, our market was hit, but South African businesses continue to make money. You know, people still bought food, they still banked, they still made cell phone calls. And these profits from the businesses were paid out as dividends to investors. I mean, Bruce, you know, we're seeing now that the global markets are down, but companies are still coming out with some really great profits. And it's this dividend income that we should be focusing on rather than the share price. And, I see so many people making all, you know, on Twitter, and financial planners will talk about all sorts of analysis about your drawdown rate in your retirement and don't go past 4% and all this. But no one is talking about building up a portfolio that allows you to live on the dividend income. And I wonder, Bruce, to what extent this is a conversation we need to be really having and really explaining and unpacking and thinking differently about investing in shares and understand the income potential from them.
I would like to go one step further back, if we can, Maya, and say, you know, talk about the dividend power, the power of dividends to help you build up capital. And so, you know, let's say in your early years of investing, you start with, you know, a couple hundred rand a month, and you get, you know, a few rand dividends. You put those back into your investment portfolio and you reinvest them. And then you get a couple of thousand rand and you're getting a couple of hundred rand in dividends and you reinvest them. Then you get tens of thousands of rand and you're getting thousands of rand in dividends and you reinvest those dividends. And suddenly over a 20-year period, you have got a portfolio that's worth probably twice as much as it would have been had you relied just on the appreciation of share prices. And you get to a point where you no longer want to work. Do you spend the capital or do you start harvesting the dividends and spending those in perpetuity? I think that's the goal we want to reach, isn't it?
Absolutely, Bruce. And, you know, I did exactly this with my mother's. My mother's retirement is based on dividend income. And I remember when the credit crisis happened, and she came to me and she said, Jeremiah, all my friends are complaining because, you know, their portfolios are down, their shares are down. But why am I still getting my income? How come mine hasn't been affected? And that's because, again, it comes down to the fact that you're not drawing down the capital. You're actually relying on the dividends. And in Bruce, the key thing with dividends as well is that they keep up with inflation simply by the nature of them. So if you think about it, a business increases its prices each year by inflation. And we all know this because everything we're buying right now has become more expensive. So the profits generally keep up with inflation. And then, of course, we hope that the business grows or expands beyond that and is able to deliver real growth. But exactly what you were saying, Bruce, you know, the key to dividend investing is keeping the investment for long enough for the dividend yield to grow and provide you with a decent income. So not only it's not only
okay,
the
now
investment
pause,
of it,
pause there. I was waiting for you to use the term dividend yield, because this
yield.
Is such an important thing.
So, dividend yield 101.
Let's say
so dividend yields the rand value of the dividend divided by the share price.
I want to simplify it even further than that, Maya. If you'd bought Capitec shares at the very bottom, say you bought yourself 1,000 Capitec shares because you were wise and you paid 76 cents each for them, because that was the bottom of the market during the small banks crisis, which I know you remember very, very clearly, as if it was yesterday, 20 years ago or thereabouts. That was the bottom of the market for Capitec. You are now harvesting dividends on Capitec. I can't even remember how much they are, but in the tens of rand, if not... You know,
rand. I think last year it paid off 34 rand in dividends.
34 rand. So you bought, if you bought these shares at 76 cents, not only have you seen capital appreciation because you've not sold a single one of these shares, so you've still got 1,000 shares, and they're now valued at, say, 2,000 rand each. Not only that, but you're getting paid 34 rand for each one of those shares that you are paying, have bought. And so you're getting a wonderful 34,000 rand a year income from these shares, because they just keep paying you dividends. And because you were very smart and you reinvested dividends for the first 20 years of your investment, you're now sitting on a portfolio considerably larger. And that's the power of compounding your dividends. You buy cheap, you hold on to the shares, they perform brilliantly, and the dividend yield now on your investment, I mean, you're getting a, I don't know what your dividend yield would be on a 76 cents.
I think my calculator would break if I try and did that. But, yeah. You know, and Bruce, this is exactly the, and you know what? This is a concept again that it's always difficult to get across. It's time. You know, this word time, right? So people, if somebody goes, they say, okay, I want these dividends. What can I get now? Well, most likely around 4% dividend yield.
So, in other words, the market is at the average at the moment.
So for 100 rand, you know, 100 rand share, you're going to get 4 rand a year on as a dividend. Now, that's not going to sound as attractive right now as a bank account, right? 5, 6% maybe if you're lucky. But companies grow their dividends above inflation. So I did a little quick calculation and I said, okay, let's assume an average growth in dividends at 5% above inflation, which is not difficult. I mean, that's a pretty good, easily achievable number. In fact, some companies have done it at 8% above inflation, but let's say 5%. So if by the age of 40, you had saved up 500,000 rand in your retirement fund or not, whatever it is that's sitting in there. So then at that stage, let's just assume a 4% dividend yield. So that's giving you 20,000 rand of income on your 500,000. But now this dividend exactly grows at 5% above inflation for the next 20 years. By the age of 60, it would give you an income in today's value, I've stripped out inflation here, of 54,000 rand. So that would be a real dividend yield of well over 10% on your initial investment, which is really the point you were making with the Capitec example. And then, of course, not only are you getting this great dividend yield, but you've also got the share price that has gone up multiples. I think a Capitec share price, I think at this point, is about 1,000 times more.
Yeah.
But I mean, not every share is a Capitec share. But the point is that you've both got this build up in capital, and you've got this dividend yield of over 10% on your original investment.
And that's enormous power. So by the time you get to a retirement date and you don't want to draw down on your capital because you want your capital to keep earning you a return, you can then start, and depending on the size of your portfolio and how much money you've put away and the value of the dividends you receive every year, you want to be kind of reinvesting some of your dividend income over the longer term, but spending without worrying about running out of money, which is the most powerful feeling I think anybody who's retiring could possibly ever hope to have.
Absolutely. Let me tell you, the cost of retirement, I think a lot of people underestimate that. So you definitely want that. And of course, Bruce, what we haven't even touched on is tax benefit of it. So one of the things also with dividends is it's a really tax efficient income as well. So if you think about rental income or income from interest, you know, sitting in a bank account, those are added to your taxable income. So that means you pay tax at your marginal rate on those, but they also add to your marginal tax rate. So it can push up you into another tax bracket, okay? Because it increases the amount of income that you have available to be taxed. With dividends, yes, you pay tax, but it is a withholding tax that's actually paid by the company that issues the dividend. It's currently 20%. So that 20% is probably lower than your marginal tax rate, and it's not added to your taxable income, pushing your tax rate up. So I think that's the other element that we need to remember as well, Bruce, because again, I promise the biggest bugbear that I have when it comes to retirement or retirees, biggest complaint to me is I didn't know I had to pay tax in retirement.
Yeah.
That tax bill for retirees is a big annoyance. And this is really another way to be, if you've structured your finances well and you've done your planning, this is a great way to keep tax efficient.
And it again goes to the value of planning. A lot of people are allergic to the idea of planning, paying a professional to help you manage your money. And you make fewer mistakes. You're not going to be mistake free, but you'll make fewer mistakes with a professional by your side, or at least giving you the guidance or saying you don't want to do that. You want to do this. This is the way to do more efficiently than that. And to take that advice and to understand the consequences of the way in which you structure your finances in perpetuity, because it can become a very expensive activity, not only being retired, but inflation corrodes your money and tax just takes the fun away. Are you worried at all about the latest thought on a wealth tax in South Africa, this idea that we can do big wealth taxes and that will solve South Africa's problems and we can then fund a basic income grant. And then at the same time, we worry why we've got a skills crisis in South Africa. I wonder where you sit on the concern in terms of concern over a wealth tax.
You know, Bruce, this has been coming and going for years. I mean, you and I both know this. We cover the budget every year. It's always been rumored. But, I also do see a lot of analysis done around it. And there's very much this feeling that if they introduce this wealth tax, especially if it's not at, really high levels, if it comes in too low, on people who perhaps are not super wealthy, that people just simply move their money. And remember, the wealthier people are, the more, transferable their money is. They can move the money out of the country quite easily. So I think there is a sense that, the amount of money that would be spent trying to find the money, the amount of money that would be spent on finding new structures to avoid it, I think there's a lot of rationality coming through saying, would this actually result in significant tax revenue really by the time people have moved their money around, found the loopholes? It would probably be quite a mission. And Bruce, there's not a lot of wealthy people left in the country. That's the other thing. I mean, you've seen the tax tables. It's actually terrifying there are very, very, very few true millionaires. You have to be a multimillionaire in South Africa to be a dollar millionaire, really in the country. So I don't know. It does keep coming up that we do see these counter arguments. I think it's more of a political stance than really a big revenue generator. So I don't know. What are your views?
No, I agree with you completely on that one. I was going to give you a view anyway, whether you'd asked or not. I concur with you, yes. But unfortunately, what it does is it undermines confidence in investing and investments, and it causes people to make duff decisions. And it causes them to go and do things like go and buy Kruger Rands to go and hide in their shoes and stuff. And they think, well, one day when I emigrate, I'll walk across the border so I don't have to go through a metal detector, and I'll take my Kruger Rands and I'll cash them in Dubai, and I can live happily ever after. And it causes people to make irrational choices when it comes to their money. And that's the thing that bugs me about the political posturing around money and taxes and wealth, and the sort of fake promises also, frankly, that it makes to poor people who really should be relying on a government that's focused on growth and opportunity rather than harvesting money that's been created over a generation or two. So I think it's a deeply flawed process. But the biggest damage it does is to self-confidence and to the sense of well-being that people who have spent their lives saving for their retirement, they suddenly feel, hold on a second, but if I invest in dividend income, government's just going to come and take it away. And that's not true. Government wants you to be self-sufficient.
Absolutely.
But
and just, Bruce, just on that note, I have, that's my frustration as well around retirement, funds, you know, and this rumors of prescribed assets and using it to bail out Eskom. I wish they would just shut up because that's exactly the reaction. People, oh, I'm not going to put my money in a retirement product because they're going to give it to Eskom. You know, I don't think they begin to understand these off-the-cuff comments or comments to the SACP or whatever it is that they're doing on the day, the impact that has on investor confidence. So I completely agree.
So, I mean, bottom line, you want to invest for as long as possible in great quality companies as cheaply as possible that can give you over time the highest proportion of profits that they generate as possible. So that by the time you get to your retirement date, at whatever time it is in the future, the percentage of the dividends that you're being paid every year way outstrip the value of the shares that you paid for 10, 15, 20 years ago. That's ideal, isn't it?
Absolutely. And again, Bruce, it comes down to planning, like you said, and time. Please, time. You cannot, you know, this is not Bitcoin. This is not a Bitcoin scam that's going to promise you overnight miracles. This is about time. This is about allowing those dividends to grow and to give you that income, you know, in 10, 20 years' time, not tomorrow.
And be patient. You know, that the first, if you've got $100 invested this year and you get a 4% dividend yield, well, you know, let's say the share price has gone up to 105, you get an extra R5 a share. Brilliant. You've now got an investment portfolio worth 110. Next year it goes up another 20%, the share price, because you had a really good year and you get another dividend yield of 5% or 4%. And now you've got $140 invested. Suddenly, this thing begins to get momentum. It starts to get this wonderful, this almost flywheel effect of growth. And then the next year, of course, the share price plummets to $90 and you go, oh my goodness gracious me, but you're still getting paid. Your 4% dividend yield. So now you're getting 4.50.
But Bruce, you go and you buy the share at R90 because now the dividend yield, just by the way, has probably popped up to 10%, because you're getting, you know, the dividend, you're still getting that dividend. So that's the trick, isn't it? And that's the power of rand cost averaging or dollar cost averaging, you know, buying every single month, irrespective of what the market's doing. Because when the market falls, that's when you're going to make all your money actually over time.
And that is the time where people least want to invest. You know, people don't want to buy Bitcoin at $100 because they don't trust that it's ever going to go up. They'll buy it at $60,000 because it's full of promise and opportunity. Falls to $20,000, nobody wants to touch the blooming things again. It's that same sort of mad psychosis of investing. And that, by the way, buying Bitcoin is not investing, you're speculating. But that's another story for another day. Maya Fisher French, thank you. Lovely to have you on. Thank your children.
Thanks,
for
please.
Not fighting and biting and hitting each other. She had to leave an interview once very early. I remember certain things. Certain people have had dogs barking in the background. Maya Fisher French upped the ante, and she had her boys, who were teenagers at the time, young teenagers, who decided to have a disagreement, and she went, sorry, but I have to go, and she did. But we have her back, because the boys,
fortunately, they're now grown up, practically grown up men, and they don't try and kill each other anymore, Bruce.
Well, not that you know about. Thank you, Maya Fisher French. She is the fabulous editor of Maya on Money. She's a contributor to City Press. She is a prolific communicator on personal finance and one of the very, very best at it in the country. And Maya Fisher French is a regular contributor here on The Money Show.